Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
I'm joined in the studio now by the Minister for Public Expenditure, National Development Plan Delivery and Reform, Pascal Donoghue. Minister, you're very welcome. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
Now, the Fiscal Advisory Council out this morning on Morning Ireland, they say you don't have the money for extra spending. If you do spend, they say you'll drive up inflation. They also said, this was really interesting, that when you spend outside a budget cycle, so the one-off measures that we have seen you take of late, you give so little detail that you give the impression that you're pulling the money out of a hat. What do you say to all of that?
So the Fiscal Advisory Council have always been a very helpful and important input into our budget planning process. And I, and I'm sure Minister McGrath, will carefully consider what they said today. I would make the case, though, for the bigger picture in relation to this, which they, in fairness, they do acknowledge when they comment about our current budgetary strategy. We are starting from a position now of many large surpluses in the time ahead. And the reason for that is we have not spent the additional levels of corporate tax that have come in recent years. Mm-hmm. So the core focus of the Fiscal Advisory Council has been run surpluses when times are good, and don't spend tax revenue that you believe we might not have tomorrow. And the case I would make, and we'll have to consider very carefully what they've said, is we're running a surplus for this year of around 8 billion euro, 10 billion for the year ahead in 2024. We're one of the very few economies now with that level of surplus, because we've tried to do the right thing with our public finances, but we'll continue to do that.
Sebastian Byrne said this morning, you can't spend that money because of the ageing population. You just can't do it.
But what he also said, I believe, is that we need to set aside this year and in the coming years enough money to deal with the ageing population that you've just said there. And the Department of Finance and the Minister for Finance, Minister McGrath, just said that a few weeks ago, that we estimate that up to 2030, if you look at where we were before the pandemic, we'll need to set aside an extra 8 to 9 billion euro per year to deal with our society becoming older. But we have been doing that year by year. We have been putting more money into dealing with the costs of our society becoming older because people are living for longer. And if you look at last year, we have, between last year and this year, set aside 6 billion euro in a National Reserve Fund while running a surplus. And we're now examining proposals for a new fund to deal with other costs for the future.
But the political pressure to cut taxes, and the Fiscal Advisory Council says that this presents a risk to our public finances now. Is Fine Gael guilty of loading on that political pressure?
But Fine Gael is the political party, including myself as Minister for Finance, that have got us to the point, when I was Minister for Finance, have got us to the point now of running the budget surpluses that IFAC have called upon us to do. They, at other points, have called on us to spend less, to make particular decisions regarding how we spend the country's money. And the reason why we are now in a position of having these surpluses is, in recent years, Michael McGrath, myself, the three party leaders, and before that, myself and Leo, tried to get the balance right. And the counterfactual I would just briefly pose, if I may, is imagine if I was on your programme this morning, corporate tax had gone up by 10 billion euro and we were still borrowing. I mean, IFAC would have very different things to say about that.
Okay, but we're not in that position. Come back to the political pressure to cut taxes, because that was really ramped up with that op-ed written by ministers from your own party in the Irish Independent. Did you know about that? Did you approve that in the way that Taoiseach did?
I wasn't involved in the drafting of that document and at that op-ed. But what I would say is that it has been a constant focus of Fine Gael over the last number of years to try and put money back in people's pockets.
So you agree with what they said?
Well, if you look at the principle of what they're arguing about, and all I'm going to deal with is the principle because the figures are a matter for budget day, I do think it's appropriate to look at how we can help with the rising cost of living. And we have done that in all of our recent budgets. Mm-hmm. And we are not going to do anything, because we haven't done it before, that would put our public finances at risk. And that isn't some abstract argument I'm making for you here today to your listeners when I talk about the safety of the public finances. If you look at what we've been able to do over the last number of years, we dealt with the cost of a pandemic and we've been able to help with the rising cost of living, and we still have a budget surplus, which means we can stand by our plans to build more houses, because we tried to get the balance right in the past, and that's what I want to continue to do.
But you'll know about the reaction from Fianna Fáil after that was published, with a Fianna Fáil Minister for Finance in position. Now, it was seen as being cheeky, to say the least. And then you had a former Fine Gael minister saying that you wouldn't take lectures from people who crashed the economy. Now, IFAC is saying today, warning you not to repeat the mistakes of the 2000s. It's not a good look, is it, for Fine Gael?
So the most important thing that we will ensure in the time ahead is that we maintain the cohesion and stability of the government, which myself, the Taoiseach, the other party leaders and Michael McGrath will do as Minister for Finance.
And do you think the op-ed helped with that?
I think the op-ed is the kind of thing that does happen when political parties are making points about their own political identity.
Maybe you think the Fianna Fáil reaction was the thing that might damage the cohesion amongst the partners.
No, I take very seriously the relationship that I have with the other two political parties that we're privileged to serve in government with, and the relationship that I have with the Minister for Finance, with Michael McGrath, couldn't be stronger and couldn't be more important to me in the work that we need to do in the time ahead.
So has he been treated fairly by the three ministers who wrote that op-ed?
Well, I think he has responded back and made his views known. And the focus.
How would you have felt if three Fianna Fáil ministers did that?
Oh, well,
you were Minister for Finance.
Well, actually, Claire, every day I hear different views regarding how money should be spent.
This is different, though. This is going out in a national newspaper, three ministers coming together, one of whom serves in the Department of Finance, and saying this. I just wonder, would you have taken kindly to that?
Well, with respect, Claire, every day of the week, both inside government and in the Dáil, I hear many different views regarding the need to spend more and how we should be spending more in different areas. So I'm very well used to that environment. And what myself and Minister McGrath will do is continue to work very, very closely together to look at how we can prepare a good budget. But I go back to your core point, if I may, briefly, regarding Fine Gael and the public finances. My party was, until very recently, until Minister McGrath took over, privileged to be in the office of Minister for Finance. And during our tenure, where, of course, we're human, you never get everything right, we have now seen our public finances come back into surplus twice. And you have seen more people at work in our country than ever before.
But you're not dismissing the warnings from IFAC.
Oh,
beware, they say, of repeating the mistakes of the 2000s.
I opened up our interview by acknowledging the important role they do play in budget planning.
The question is, though, are you going to listen to them or not? You can respect them and not listen to them.
But I have listened to them in the past, and it's because I've listened to them in the past that, for example, they have acknowledged that the budget strategy, which myself and the Minister for Finance, Minister McGrath, put in place for this year, is appropriate. And it's because I've listened to them in the past, while also respecting the fact that I'm a politician inside the government looking to gain and keep the support of people. With that balance still acknowledged, we're running a surplus for this year for 8 billion euro. And I just go back to, you know, what IFAC have warned is, don't spend on day-to-day spending money you believe we might not have in the future. We didn't. It's the reason we have a surplus today.
OK, so when it comes to one-off spending again, are people going to get in the remainder of this year more one-off measures, the types of measures that you introduce for energy?
It's too early to be able to give a clear answer to that. What we have had is we have had a mixture, as you've just acknowledged in your question, of ongoing permanent measures and then one-off measures. We'll make a decision closer to the time regarding what we should do in budget 2024. But what we have done is the large energy-related tax measures that were brought in to deal with a time in which the cost of energy was really, really high. We are phasing them out, which is exactly the kind of thing that IFAC, for example, will call upon us to do. But we will deal with the one-off measures closer to budget day when we see where we are with inflation.
Do you expect not to have to repeat those measures?
I expect that there will be some measures that we've had in the past that may be needed again. But I really can't give an indication as to what the breadth of them will be or what the measures could be. Reason why I say that is if you look at where we are with inflation overall, last year was around 8%. For this year, we believe it will come just below 5%. And we're hoping for next year will be around 2.5%. So we are seeing some signs that inflation is coming down. But for any of your listeners, when they go into a shop or where they go in to pay a bill, even though prices are falling at a higher rate, even though prices are not going up at the speed they did last
year.
They're
still going up.
They're still going up.
And when it comes to energy, we're not seeing the drops in the wholesale prices coming through in the bills that we're paying, and we're unlikely to for some time yet.
It's also the case that when the really big spikes in the price of energy happened in wholesale markets in the first half of last year, it did take some time for those spikes to travel through into the bills that we all received. So we have acknowledged that the reverse will hold true as well, that it will take time for it to feed through into household bills. But that must happen. I believe it will happen. And that is one of the reasons why I can't answer your question regarding one-off measures, because we'll need to see clearly where we are in September and early October.
Just going back to the issue of the ageing population, and we saw more evidence of that from the census figures that were released last week. Now, the Tánaiste has ruled out revisiting any increase in the retirement age. Do you feel, though, that you need to reassess that in light of what we've heard from the CSO?
So I believe we have the appropriate strategy in place to deal with that. And what that will consist of is how we can change our PRSI system through gradual changes in our PRSI rates over many years to build up our social insurance fund in other ways.
Starting when?
So the Minister for Social Protection, in conjunction with the Minister for Finance, I'm sure, will bring forward a plan with regard to that. And I would imagine that will form part of our budgetary planning.
It's a hard political bullet to bite, though, isn't it? Because we had IFAC Chief Economist Eddie Casey here last week, and he said if you do it quickly, if you do it soon, it would be 1,300 a year on average it would need to go up by. If you delay it, it'll be 2,000 a year. Now, that's significant for people.
It's a very big difference, and it's another reason why running the budget surpluses that we have at the moment is of such value, because it can play a role in dealing with those costs in the future. But while we will consider what we want to do with our PRSI code to ensure our social insurance fund is in surplus in the future, to allow us then to pay our pensions in the future, we have year by year been setting aside more to deal with the ageing nature of our society. And of course, what the CSO also pointed to the fact is that our population's got bigger. And I know you covered that as well. And by our population getting bigger, more people at work, and more people are paying taxes as well. And that's really valuable too.
And on that, because the population is growing much quicker than we thought it was, and these figures prove that, do you think that the National Development Plan will need to be reviewed again in the way that it was 2 years ago?
So again, that is a budget day decision, and I'll have to work with Minister McGrath with regard to that. But importantly, in the National Development Plan framework that we already have in place, we are already planning to increase capital spending for next year already. And that's already baked in to our budget day plans and was communicated a number of years ago. So we will already have an increase in our capital spending for next year of over 800 million euro, which in turn will mean we already have the plans in place for what we want to do with our hospitals, for our schools, to respond back to that demographic change.
I was reading Miriam Nord's column at the weekend with interest. I'm sure you saw it yourself. The speculation, she said, about Pascal Donoghue's impending departure from politics has not abated. If the whispers in Leinster House are to be believed, Pascal has the next big job all but nailed down. Do you?
The only job I'm focused on at the moment is the one I have. That is the next big thing, what I'm doing at the moment. I will be putting my name forward in the next general election. I want to continue to serve the people of Dublin Central for as long as they will have me. I also want to make the case for Fine Gael continuing to stay in government.
So if you run for election for the next Dáil, you plan to serve out the full term of that Dáil, do you?
Yes.
There was also an interesting point in that piece about your constituency office being closed for the last 6 months. Why is that?
It actually closed during the pandemic. And the reason why I did that is actually the landlord who I was renting the office of had other plans for the office. And I also found that during the pandemic, the demand for people to call in to meet me in my office really, really lessened. Mm-hmm. So what I've done is, as opposed to having to identify a new office with a different landlord, what I've just done is do my normal Fridays in my constituency out and about in different parts of my
constituency. So people can't make an appointment to see you in any office because you don't have one. They have to talk to you on the street.
No, I instead go to meet them. So what I can do is I can use community halls, community facilities to go and meet constituents, which is what I've done. So that office has been closed for a number of years now.
Okay, and Miriam Nord board made the point as well that the controversy over the postering issue, which I know SIPO have dealt with, and they said that they have, that this is closed now, the matter is closed. Did that leave a sour taste, as she suggests?
Oh, I really regret that it happened. I really regret now that it happened. Even at the time of that controversy, I made the case in acknowledging that I made a mistake. But I also said there was a principle of proportionality here. At the end of the day, it was about the cost of putting up posters. I acted to rectify that mistake. And I'm very grateful that that act has been recognised by SIPO. And they have decided that no further action would be in the public interest.
Her suggestion is the whole thing might have put you off politics.
No, it hasn't. I'm very lucky to do what I do. I have a lot of energy and appetite to continue to do this in the time ahead. Of course, the period during January, of course it was difficult. I never dreamed I'd be in a position where I would deal with questions regarding my own integrity and the cost of an election that at that point was over 6 years ago. But I made a mistake. I owned up to it. I fixed it. And I, as I said, appreciate the matter was dealt with speedily by SIPO and they reached an independent decision where they accepted my actions and believed that no further action was merited.
I
want to put it behind me. Continue, of course, to adhere to the rules, that goes without saying, and not make the same mistake again.
I just want to ask you about something we're going to be talking about later on. That's that unexpected merger between LIV Golf and the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour.
We're really covering it all here.
We certainly are. From
golf to SIPO to the future of the public finances.
But I'll tell you why I'm asking you. Because of your role with the Eurogroup, are you concerned, you and your colleagues, about this sports washing issue? You know, how states like Saudi Arabia are managing to inveigle their way in, using their money to become involved in sports like golf, gaining credibility, laundering their reputations around Europe and elsewhere.
So I am a huge sports fan, but I'm not a golf expert at all. And I think I'd have a bit more study to do of what's happening in relation to the integration of the different golfing organisations before I could give you a full answer. But if I could just respond as a sports fan and then as somebody who's very conscious of these issues on the political stage. Firstly, broadly, you know, any investment that can help bring sports fans all over the world together, I instinctively do support. So if I look at investment that has, for example, gone into the Premiership, if I look at investment that has happened in soccer and other parts of the world.
Regardless of where it's coming from, you welcome it.
So by and large, if it helps people enjoy the sport more, it's something I do welcome.
It makes it more expensive.
However, I do believe it should be within certain parameters. And I think that's one of the things we're all going to need to consider as politicians. I don't believe it is appropriate that the purchase of sporting organisations or sporting clubs is used as a tool of foreign policy or is used to achieve other things that a state may want to do.
And do you think that's what might
be happening here? And I think we're going to have to consider that now in the time ahead. I don't believe the decision that the American and international sporting decisions organisations are going to make will need regulatory approval. I think it's a decision they can make commercially. But I do think governments are going to need to be sensitive to the fact in the time ahead that sporting decisions are not used as conduits of foreign policy or to say things about countries. And I have a sense that we're approaching that line and we need to make sure we don't step over it.
They have football. They have golf now.
Well, with the greatest of respect, I think owning a few Premiership clubs and owning a few big clubs across Europe is a long way away from saying they have football. And it's one of the things I value so much about the League of Ireland and the ethos they have there and clubs like Bowes, how they manage to maintain a very strong local link. I think it's still the case in soccer clubs across Europe that most of them have strong links with the fans who support them. Yeah. I'd never want to see that changed. And as I said, I don't want to see the purchase of sporting organisations become a tool of foreign policy.
I just saw a report in the Irish Times that the FAI were in seeking investment from the corporation tax windfall. Now, if you really believe in that position, you would be, I would imagine, prepared to invest.
But sure, we've run multiple rounds of sports capital funding over the last few years. We launched a large infrastructure fund. And let me explain very quickly what that is. It's a fund that we would use on behalf of the taxpayer to fund larger sporting facilities across the country for clubs from all traditions and sporting interests.
So they've got what they've got and that's it?
I didn't say that either. What I've said is we've done more than your question might recognise, but we know we need to do more. Okay. Because if we want to ensure that sport isn't open to other influence, the state has a role to play. But on the other hand, commercial sponsorship and the funding that that puts into sporting organisations is valuable. Sport can't look to the taxpayer to do everything.
All right, Minister, thank you for joining us.
Thank you,
Pascal
Claire.
Donoghue. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.